Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Apologies for the wait, and thank you so much for being here. I'm Ron Swanson. We're live in the Sean Atwood channel with Matt Cox, and we're going to be diving in to the whole Garth Brooks. Is he? Isn't he? Is it possible? Is it shenanigans? The whole mystery behind, is he a serial unaliver, as we have to say for the first 5 minutes on YouTube, and discussing Matt's new book, Bodies in Low Places. Matt, thank you for being here. It's great to finally talk to you.
Yeah. Good stuff. It's good stuff.
And listen, for those of you who don't know, tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself, and we can get crack-a-lacking on this. I'm sure it's going to be an interesting tale.
That's a tough one. I didn't know we were going to do that. I was in federal prison for 13 years. I ended up running real estate scams and frauds, that sort of thing. I owned a mortgage brokerage business.
Okay.
And I started committing fraud. I eventually got into trouble. I started a much larger fraud. I started making what's called synthetic identities, or fake people.
Okay.
And I would take these fake people and I'd build up their credit profiles. And I'm not sure any of this is going to make sense.
It sounds like you're robbing from the really big, massive corporations by using fake people. And I'll be honest, better than robbing grandmas. That's all I'm saying. All right.
Yeah, I would go in, I'd buy a bunch of houses, and then I'd refinance those houses, pull out the cash, let the houses go into foreclosure. Eventually the FBI shows up again, and I take off on the run for 3 years. So the total, I think I did this for 6 or 7 years. I think the U.S. Attorney's Office said I did it for a decade. That's not true. But so it was about six or seven years. Eventually I get caught. It was like around $15 million is what I was personally held responsible for. I think between me and the mortgage company, they said I did $55 million, but whatever. Point is, I went to prison. While I was incarcerated, I started writing I wrote my own memoir.
Sure.
And then I started writing true crime stories for other inmates. For instance, I don't know if you ever saw the movie War Dogs.
I need to Google it. Maybe, very possibly. Hang on a second.
Okay. So War Dogs. Do you know who Jonah Hill is?
Yes. So I know War Dogs. War Dogs. I've seen War Dogs. War Dogs is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Freaking awesome movie.
So I was incarcerated with Jonah Hill's character, which is, his name is Ephraim Devaroli. Yeah. Damn. And I wrote his memoir. So he has a memoir out. I wrote his true crime memoir while we were incarcerated. I wrote a bunch of them. I mean, most of these guys you would have heard of, right? Like, but, you know, I got some guys in Rolling Stone magazine. I optioned some of their life rights. And eventually, when I was released, I started a true crime podcast. But I also had written 7 books. I got 2 publishing deals while I was incarcerated. When I got out, I started publishing all of the different books that I had. And in the course of doing all of that, something had come up. And the way it came up was I was interviewing someone. I was interviewing a woman by the name of Stacy Lee. She actually has a podcast about murder and that, you know, women tend to, oh shoot, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
I said, no, you're good. You get one or two cheeky slip-ups. It's fine. Don't worry.
So Stacy has a podcast and she does stuff on, you know, dark crimes.
Yeah.
And what happened was I was interviewing her just about her own personal story. She was raised in the Mormon church and she eventually left the Mormon church. And so we just kind of had that conversation. And we also talked about her, you know, her starting her podcast, which I thought was interesting. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but 70% of violent true crime is consumed by women. Now, if it's not violent, if it has to do with, let's say, bank robberies or it's something along the drug related, that sort of thing, maybe frauds, most of those people or most of those consumers are male. For instance, on my YouTube channel, 92% of my viewers are male.
Okay.
I don't know what it is on yours, because we really don't, I don't have any real violent content.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Right. But so it's like 8%.
Ladies,
that's very low.
Ladies, you want to have a quick look in the mirror and ask yourself, why is that, ladies? Okay.
I wonder why that is.
It sounds like men like watching true crime about the boys hanging out together, you know, getting a fun activity done in the day. It's teamwork. It's team building. It's a group effort. Women fantasizing about killing their husbands. I'm saying it now.
Or, you know, it could be that. Like, it's funny. It could be that. It could be. And that I think is, I don't know if it's maybe they're trying to deal with their fear or are they trying to figure out what to do or are they trying to figure out how to avoid it? I don't really know. But the point
it could be trying to avoid it. Actually, it makes it, to be perfectly honest with you, it kind of makes sense. I mean, and this is going to sound really stupid, but I used to be obsessed with bushcraft and survival, and I used to consumed as much of that to have the knowledge ahead of time to not die out in the wilderness. So it may be some knowledge based how not to be in a situation. It could be that. That's a good take.
It's possible. Yeah. I've just read some articles, and, you know, I guess I don't think there has been any real study on it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that there needs to be, but I had read an article or two, but they were basically pinging between the two. So Stacy Lee and I were talking, and as we're talking about, we were talking about roughly that topic. Mm-hmm. And the Garth Brooks thing came up. And so she mentioned to me that this whole Garth Brooks thing, and I'll tell you what happened was she started off by talking about Tom Segura.
Okay.
And so we started because that's really where it begins. Now, Tom Segura will tell you it didn't begin there. He's like, oh no, I'm just repeating something I heard on the internet. I can't remember what it was, but the point is what happened is he and his wife have a podcast. So Tom Segura is a famous comedian in the United States. His wife is also a very successful comedian, and her name's Christina. And so Tom and Christina have a podcast called Your Mom's House. Well, one day they're talking. One of the things they do a lot is they'll take people's social media and they'll watch some of the, let's say it's TikToks or shorts or whatever it is. And they'll watch them, and sometimes they're like, wow, what a great guy. And then sometimes, not. And this is what happens most of the time. Most of the time what they say is, look at this idiot, or look at this guy, or look at this woman who's, you know, showing herself at the gym and she's got to be 150 pounds overweight, or she's talking about preparing her diet for the week. And it's like, clearly she's not eating this food. So, you know, they'll make fun of her and joke around and stuff about different social media people. And one day somebody mentioned Garth Brooks to them. So they pulled up Garth Brooks. It's because women. They pulled up Garth Brooks. Now, here's the thing about Garth Brooks. He came on the social media scene late, right? So about 5 years ago or so, Garth Brooks started posting on Facebook.
Okay.
So about 4 years ago, they pulled up one of his videos and they watched two or three of his videos. And the thing about Garth Brooks is that, you know, and by the way, I love country music. I grew up to Garth Brooks. I'm in the South.
I mean, I know the name Garth Brooks. I know the hat. Oh. I know all of that. I couldn't name you a single song, right?
Oh, but listen.
I know Garth. So if you were to tell me some, I'd be like, oh yeah, I know that one, of course.
I'm in.
But he's huge. He's massive. He's iconic. Right.
I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
Which is the South. And in the South, they love country music. So everybody knows country music down here. Here's the thing. Throughout his career, he's been interviewed multiple times, but the majority of the interviews that he's conducted have been kind of staged, right? Like, you know, if you're on the radio, then they have like six questions they ask you. Yeah. And you have kind of canned responses that you give. So these aren't really, you know, these aren't really interviews like you and I are doing where you could say anything and I'm not prepared. I don't know what you're talking about. I have to just answer.
Scripted. And
exactly. Very scripted. Very choreographed. Well, when social media came and he starts on Facebook, it's just Garth. Just him talking. And for the first time, people started noticing like, he's a little off.
Okay.
You know, he's one of those guys where, and I really started seeing these guys when I was incarcerated, really started noticing them, where you'd be in a room of 40 guys and they would be watching something on TV and something would happen and everybody would laugh. And there's always a couple of guys, especially in prison, because there's a lot of them. There's always a few of these guys where they kind of glance around and then they go,
yeah.
And you realize like, oh, you don't really get it. Like, and you can always, and then when you talk to those guys, you start to notice like, you're not really connecting with people. Like something, like there's a disconnect here. Like you don't joke a lot. You're not funny. You don't get humor. You don't get social cues. You don't. And so what happens is, and they say inappropriate things or they laugh at the wrong time. So Tom Segura and his wife, Christina, are watching some of these videos and they're pointing it out. They're like, listen, it's like there's nothing behind the fucking curtain. Like there's something very strange with this guy. And at one point, Christina says to Tom, so what do you think it is? He goes, what do I think it is? He goes, I think he's thinking about all the bodies he's got buried underneath his house. That's what I'm thinking. And she goes, you think he's a killer? She's super funny. And he goes, absolutely. Absolutely. He's got at least 200 or 300 bodies buried somewhere. Look at this guy. He's a serial killer. So she jokes around and says all this. And they start going back and forth. And Tom Segura leans into it. Right? Like he deadpans.
Of course he does. Of course like he would.
Absolutely serious.
Yeah.
That probably would have been it for him. That episode would have been over, except that his fans just went nuts.
Of course.
They loved it.
If you tweet that out and get 50 likes, no problem. But if you're one of the biggest comedians in the world and have a fan base that's going to go, well, if you've said it, we can run with it.
Liam,
it's just the snowball effect is incredible.
Yeah, well, you don't know what's going to work, right? You're a comedian. Right? You throw it out there. Sometimes people laugh. Sometimes they don't.
I don't know what's going to work as a comedian. The man has created a ripple effect of meme and conspiracy like nothing else. It's incredible. Oh,
listen, people go to Garth Brooks concerts. They hold up signs that say, like, where are the bodies, Garth? You know, I want my grandmother back. You owe me for dry cleaning. We had to replace the carpets in my mom's house. You know, I mean, just insane thing. And then they've all gone into Garth Brooks's into the comment section of all of his social media.
I'd seen that actually. I'll bring some of it up because I couldn't understand what I was seeing. And now you put context to it, it makes sense. But yeah, I'll pull some of that up. You just keep going whilst I grab that.
Okay. So what ends up happening is, so because he gets such a good reaction from this, they start following Garth Brooks. And anytime that anything comes up related to Garth, Segura ends up making a comment about it, talking about it. He was interviewed by Rolling Stone magazine. He talks about Garth Brooks. He does his entire his concert tour. I mean, I don't know if you call it a concert tour for
So these are underneath one of Garth Brooks' posts.
I've seen my family in months. Hide the evidence, G. G, please, where is my family?
Hey, like, I get it, right? But I mean, every one of those signs is, that's a ticket sold, baby. Do you know what I'm saying? It's you know, it's.
Who's going to pay for my carpet, G?
Like, do you know what? It's good when the internet kind of goes into something this hard, but so hard lightheartedly. Do you know what I'm saying?
I agree. Because, so,
you know, you know what I'm saying? But again, we're not saying he is or he isn't. Okay. We're having some fun here, but the data is kind of mad. Okay. But it's very circumstantial. Okay. Yeah, it could probably happen to anyone. If I sent Matt on a tour round America, I guarantee we could frame him as well. People go missing all the time. But again.
Well, also, you know, especially in the United States.
Yeah, of course.
Here's what happens is I'm talking to Stacey Lee about this.
Okay.
You know, and we're talking, and during that conversation, she says, during the conversation, she tells me one of the things that comes out eventually is somebody, one of Segura's fans, one of Tom Segura's fans, comes out and says, listen, there's actually a list of unsolved homicides and missing persons cases that correspond with all of Garth Brooks's concert tour dates. So she tells me this and I go, are you serious? She goes, yeah, supposedly there's some kind of a list. They come up with it. People start talking about it. They're talking about different events. He was here. Somebody went missing. He goes here. Somebody was found, you know, deceased.
Here's a mind map of it. If anyone would like to screenshot that and give themselves a migraine.
Oh my gosh. So I ask her, is there actually an actual list that really does? And she said, no, there's no real list, you know?
Yeah,
that's kind of a all over the place, you know, but really saying, hey, Garth Brooks was here on this date and this person ended up missing. And there's a correlation, possibly it was a mile or two from the stadium, whatever the case may be. So I asked her, is that possible? She said, no. She said, I've never found one. And I know we looked into it. We never found one on the internet. And, you know, other than those kind of compilations that aren't, they're just kind of mismatches, right? And if you really look at, like, there's no real, it's just people making odd connections. So as we're talking about it, she says, I even tried to come up with a list. I said, you did? She said, yeah. She said, I spent a few hours pulling up all of his concert or some of his concert dates and trying to connect them with missing people. She said, out of like 20, I came out up with two or three. And then I started realizing that there were over 1,000 tour dates from this guy. Yeah. And she said, and I realized, like, what am I doing? Like, right. I can't do this. Like, this is too much work. Like, she's got like two kids and a husband. She's like, I'm not doing this.
Of course.
And we're laughing about it. And I said, has anybody ever written a book about it? She said, no, not that I know of. And I did a little bit of digging and I didn't find anything. And then I thought, you know what? I remember she said, who would do that? Who would have the time? And I thought, you know, I have the time.
I got the time right here.
I have the time to do this.
Yeah.
You know? So I contact a buddy of mine. His name is Pete. And Pete is kind of on the spectrum.
Okay.
And so I call Pete and I talk to him about this. And he says, we have to look into this. I said, well, we have to. We have to. I mean, we're two men in our mid-50s with no real families. You know, I'm married, but, you know, my wife, you know, has a job. And it's not like we have young kids to take care of. Like, we're both
I grew up with Scooby-Doo, right? You know, those fun mysteries.
Yes.
Right? Of course. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is your Scooby-Doo adventure right here. You know what I mean? It really is. And hell yeah. Who doesn't want to be involved in that? You know what I'm saying?
So what we do is Pete ends up – he ends up doing the research for Garth's timeline. Mm-hmm. and also the timeline on when he went to the CMA Awards, when he went to the Billboard Awards, when he went to these different locations. I hire two researchers to research all of his tour dates. So we get all of his tour dates. We then get as many, and this is very difficult. There could be a lot more out there, but we have to go to a lot of states will run these missing persons and unsolved homicide websites. And then there's something called NEMIS, which is a government, the federal government website for missing people and unsolved homicides, that sort of thing. So there's these different websites you can go to. So it took a month or two to kind of systematically go through all of them. Sure. And then if you found someone who was, let's say, and also we did research for newspaper articles, that sort of thing. And sometimes those tie in with the website. Sometimes they don't tie in with the websites at all. You have to look into that. It's cumbersome, right? It's time consuming because sometimes you find somebody and you say, hey, wow, this person went missing when Garth Brooks was here for 4 days and this guy went missing and he lives 2 miles away from, you know, the stadium.
Yep.
And then the problem is you continue to do the research and then you find out that they found the killer 6 months later, they arrested the guy. So you have to kind of do some, you know, and I'm saying I'm perfect. I feel like we were pretty good about it.
Yeah, of course.
So we get a list. We end up with, I want to say it's 80 unsolved homicides and 120 missing persons.
Okay. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people.
Damn.
So once we've got that data, we go through and we start. I don't know what this is. I don't know why this thing keeps going off. All right, let's turn that off. That's got to go off. Okay. Sorry. So we start the timeline. Oh, I also interviewed two psychiatrists.
Okay.
Forensic psychiatrists that you know have done research on serial offenders.
Okay.
And I found a guy that worked for Garth Brooks on several tours. He's a roadie.
Nice.
You don't
know
a roadie?
Okay. I know exactly. Yeah. Hell yeah. Groupies and the roadies, man. Those are the ones you want to interview. They've seen some stuff.
And what was the other thing? And a retired FBI agent.
Nice. All right. So please tell me the retired FBI agent is convinced Garth's a killer and has dedicated his retirement years to tracking down Garth Brooks, right?
He's not tracking down anybody. No, okay, he's definitely kind of like, he's like, this is good stuff. This is a lot of fun. And he was like, this is a lot of fun. And so we really leaned into it.
Nice.
Now, I would like to say that the two psychiatrists did not know that they were talking to me about Garth Brooks.
Wicked. Nice one. So you kept it databased rather than...
Yes. I just explained to him that it was a high-profile musician and that there were... And I gave them some examples and I was like... And then I just asked them questions regarding, like, for instance, his, you know, someone, a serial... Can I say?
You can now, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, let's say a serial killer's upbringing.
Yep.
One of the things that I had always heard was that they had to have some kind of traumatic event. And in my mind, that always meant that that trauma had to be some kind of violence. I don't know why. I just assumed it was violence.
Okay.
And it turns out that that's not true at all. Nope. You know, there has to be certain things like one of them was like bedwetting. Harming animals. Like there's all these things that you hear, but it's not necessarily true.
Yep.
For example, Ted Bundy, infamous serial killer.
Of course.
Ted Bundy, you know, the trauma that they always relate to the trauma in Bundy's life. Well, one, they say he was an awkward kid. Like he wasn't nearly the charming person that he ended up being later in life. His childhood friends said that he was kind of just, you know, an awkward guy. The other thing was that the trauma in his life was that Bundy was raised by his grandparents. He thought his grandparents were his actual parents.
Okay.
His sister was actually his mother.
Mm.
So what had happened was his mother had gotten pregnant very young. I don't know if it was 14, 15. She got pregnant, had the baby. And they raised, and so that, you know, because of the stigma back in the, you know, 40s and 50s, they didn't want her to be looked down upon or the family to be looked down upon. So they sent her off to have the, you know, during the last few months of pregnancy, have the baby, come back. And they said that the grandmother had had the baby, and this was the newest addition to our house. And they had the mother and their grandchild, which they raised as their kid. And the, and so Bundy thought his sister was, I mean, his mother was a sister. Well, when he's about 14 or 15, he finds out the truth. And they said it was very traumatic for him because he felt like everybody in his life had been lying to him his entire life.
Okay.
As a result of that, it kind of fractured him psychologically on being able to make a connection with people in general, but especially with women. And it turns out that most of these women that he ended up attacking, his victims, looked very similar to his mother. So he harbored some real resentment to his towards his mother, and he exclusively attacked women. So, but once again, this isn't violent. He wasn't beaten. He wasn't tortured. He wasn't kept in a box or chained to a radiator in a basement somewhere. This is just kind of a, a dysfunctional family. And I don't even think it's probably the worst dysfunction of any family I've ever heard of. I've heard a lot worse than that.
Of course. I mean, it's kind of testament, though, to how individual human limitations are when it comes to one thing and another, really, isn't it?
Some people might have had the same thing and nothing happens. They're perfectly fine with it. Like, oh, okay, I get it. I understand. So let's take Jeffrey Dahmer. Dahmer had an issue because he had a separation. He had kind of a
separation anxiety.
Separation anxiety.
Nuclear scale.
Yes. So it turns out that he was very close with his father. Mm-hmm. They used to do like taxidermy stuff, you know, like cutting up animals. And
that was their thing. To try and find, I mean, if your son is a young Jeffrey Dahmer and you're looking for a way to bond, okay, I imagine
not the way to go.
As soon as you see your son into anything, you're going to try and get involved. But scooping up the dead roadkill, taking it home, making some little things out of it, maybe the wrong choice, I'm thinking.
In his case, may have meant nothing. But the point is, his mother and father, they fight all the time, and eventually they break up. Right?
Yeah.
They completely sever their relationship. He grows up being passed around between the mom, the dad, the grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm just using these are the there's lots of examples of this, but these are more well known serial killers.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's all right. You can play the hits here. It's fine. It's good analogy.
So I'll give you so here's the thing. So because in Garth, now keep in mind, Garth, it has a real stranglehold on every aspect of media involvement in his life. Everything that is out there that's about him, he has been scrutinized by Garth before it's been released. So you have nothing. We know very little about his upbringing other than what he said. Everybody else, nobody really talks about it. There's one or two small interviews. Now, here's the thing. His mother was actually a country music star. She was a singer. She had a couple of shows. She was doing very well. This is back in the 50s, right? And in order to have a family, she had to give that up. Okay. So then they have a family of Garth, his brother. I think they've got another brother and a sister. I think one of them's like a half sister, or one of the siblings is like a half from I think the father might have been married before or something. I'm not sure how that was. Like, you just don't know. Yeah. Anyway, what ends up happening is, now was the mother upset about that? Did she take it out on the kids? You know, who knows? What I do know is this, is that the kids were all forced to learn to play an instrument, and every week they had to have a talent show for the whole family.
Listen, I'm not being funny. I've got 7 kids. Just keep having kids until one of them's famous. Okay. You just got to play the odds, Matt. You got to play the odds. That's what they're doing there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they guess they get
lucky. Do it in a fun way, not a regimented, you know, way, of course.
So I was wondering, like, it was his mom Was she, you know, harboring some resentment towards the kids? Is she,
maybe not resentment, but you know, when you see those dance mums, right? Like those shows, and clearly we're all watching it going, you're traumatizing your children with this, right? And none of the dance mums can see it because they're living so vicariously through the child. It seems to be like a set of glasses that goes on some mums and they can't see it. If she's had to give up her career, maybe that's exactly what she's doing, trying to channel through her children.
That's possible. What about, what was that? Is that that woman that had like the super famous, was it a YouTube channel with all of her kids? And it came out later that she was like brutalizing the kids.
Yeah,
and the kids stopped wanting to do it. And she's like, well, and she's forcing them to do it. And she's like, well, hold on. She's like, smile.
Yeah.
We're about to be on camera. You better start smiling. Yeah. Do you want to? And just like, Jesus. And as soon as the cameras came on, the kids are all like, they're all happy and stuff. It's like, yeah, what are you doing?
She's serving a life sentence in a federal prison right now.
Really? Who was that? What was her name?
She ended up holding all of her children hostage in a basement, malnourished. One of them had Ruby Frank. Thank you, Ruby Frankie. And she basically kicked her husband out, moved in this weird, well, just for layman's terms, cultish woman into her life. And then it all went downhill from there. But I mean, the kids, the wee boy had to run to the neighbor's house crying his eyes out. They called the police and the rest is history, but crazy.
But this is the one where the kid, but they were doing like a show, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Dude, they were family vlogging, right? They were a traditional family vlogging channel. And then you started seeing cracks form when, like, I think the son was laughing at the misfortune of the younger daughter. So the mum removed his entire bedroom for 3 months. He no longer was allowed a bedroom. Bit harsh. Okay. Like a bit harsh.
Where's he sleeping?
He was sleeping in the hallway on the floor. Like, it's bonkers. But and then before that, it was a family of five. That was pre-COVID era family vlogging, where all the kids were playing tricks on each other and getting the parents to come in and scream at them, and more trauma and more. There no federal prison for them, but certainly family, whatever the American version of the state, when the state comes in to look after the kids.
Oh man, yeah. Right. Child services.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Well, I mean, so I kind of wonder about that. And I'll tell you another. So, and I've, like I said, there's in the book where I talk to these, we have interviews with the psychiatrist where they're explaining different things about, you know, I give them an example. I actually let them read about this whole thing, but I remove the name and send it to them. They'd read it and they'd be like, well, this is very common, you know, doesn't necessarily, and they would, I'd write up what they said about it. But they have no idea who they're talking about though.
Of course.
So
it's Kirby.
It goes on and on. And one of the things that has a lot of these serial killers it's always kind of about like, when did they cross that line? You know?
Yeah, I know.
So typically what happens, they cross the line when they are typically on their own for the first time.
Okay.
Right. So if you're living in the house with your mom and dad and two brothers, and you know, you're not doing anything. Now, there are some cases where the kids are basically like latchkey kids and they actually have harmed other children and left them in ditches or killed them in the woods or something along those lines.
And but, animals too. Animals as well.
Yes. But that's not the case necessarily here. But so Dahmer, the first time he was on his own, where he's living in his grandmother's house, but she's not there, is the first time he actually murders someone.
Okay.
He meets someone, they go out, he brings them back to the house.
That's right.
That's they have some, and he's young. He's a young guy.
I forgot about Dahmer's murder in the grandparents' house. I mean, that's a bold move for anybody, by the way. Just want to say.
And he had tried it before with like a jogger he had met. He met that's a right. jogger. Yeah, that's but right. he couldn't get. I don't think he could get him back to the house. The guy got back to the house and took off running or something. He was like, "No, something's like not right."
Yeah,
but this kid, he gets him back to the house. They end up getting stoned, and Dahmer ends up clubbing him when he wants to leave. Right, social like he's got. I'm not social anxiety. He has separation anxiety, right. So he didn't want the guy to leave. The guy's like, "Yeah, we gotta go. I gotta go." And he takes a 5 or a 10 pound. Weight and clubs him in the back of the head and ends up killing him and laying with him for a couple days. Eventually he dismembers him and throws him in the back of the woods or something. I forget if that's the one. Yeah, I know. No, I think the one he threw away in the back of the woods, I think that might've been this other guy, which I'll mention because it also ties into Garth, where he actually kills the guy somewhere else, puts him in a trunk and transports him to the grandmother's house and dismembers him and throws him away in the woods.
Damn.
But this isn't like 2 miles away. This is this is from the city. He lives in the suburbs. This is 20-30 minutes. This is an hour drive. Like this is a long way away. Perfectly comfortable. Takes a cab. Loads up the thing. Loads the big suitcase trunk thing in the back of the cab. Anyway, the point is, the very common for serial killers to kill someone and then transport the body somewhere else to be dismembered or be buried or even just to keep the body for a long period of as long as they can until eventually it's decaying and they just can't keep it around anymore.
Yeah.
So in Garth's case, what we found was when Garth turned 18, he ended up going to Oklahoma State University he goes to.
Okay.
So he goes to Oklahoma State University. There's a woman there. This is in 1981. There's a woman there by the name of Tracy Nelson.
Okay.
She's also going to school with him. And we don't know whether or not she was in one of his classes or not. We're not sure. But we do know that they were in school at the same time. We also know that she lived in an apartment complex near to where Garth lived.
And what happened to her?
She was found.
No longer with us.
Yes. On her birthday, by the way, in her house. Now, here's the thing. Someone had obviously stalked her, found out where she lived, and entered the house. How did they enter the house? I don't know. If you were a fellow college student that you knew each other, probably wouldn't be hard to get in that house. But she was found deceased in her bedroom on the bed. No sexual activity that is known of, though.
Okay.
Which is, by the way, almost all of these victims, there's no real sexual activity.
Okay. Yeah. Listen, I've spoken to a couple of people, serial killers who are in prison. And one in particular, he never ever planned to kill anyone. It was people that were rude to him that got snuffed. And it just the maddest
story.
It was crazy. It's crazy. Like, he had a woman in his long distance lorry and she changed the radio. And then I do believe she apologized and changed it back. And he was like, that saved her life that day. And I was just, bam. So it's crazy.
here's the thing about Garth. Garth, at that time, at the university, he was working at a college bar close to the university as a bouncer. So when you're coming in and out of the bar, he's looking at your ID. He's IDing you. You hand him your ID on a Florida or on a, sorry, state, U.S. state driver's license. It has your address on your driver's license. It could have been as simple as that. She came in the bar. He grabs the license. He takes a look at it. He hands it to her. He recalls it. And who knows? It could have been she was in his class or in a class. He had seen her several times. He stalks her, follows her home. Who knows?
It's a compelling bit of data, Matt. I mean, the first time that he's no longer with his parents, he's out, he's at college, and that's where the data begins, allegedly. I mean, we're certainly not making any accusations, but it's an interesting data point when you consider how close their proximity was to each other. And then you have to ask, why is he so secretive about his upbringing? Do you know what I'm saying? Is there a slew of neighborhood dogs buried in backyards that no one wants dug up, metaphorically speaking? Who knows, right? It's an interesting deal.
Listen, he's got, like I said, he's really has a stranglehold. Like, I believe his degree, I want to say it's in marketing. Mm. So he really knows how to market himself. He knows the image he wants to put out there. That's for sure. So what ends up happening is he ends up working at a place he ends up meeting a girl at college, right? Meets her, they get married. He ends up graduating college. He goes to Nashville because he wants to become a country music star. He and the wife go to Nashville. He's working at a place called the Boot Barn, where you buy cowboy boots.
Okay.
In Nashville. Next to the Boot Barn, there are, I want to say it's three women were found deceased.
Okay.
All right. In the general area, and all of them worked and lived near the Boot Barn during the time that he was there. Now, there's actually also like three more. There's also, I think there's, it's either two next to, there's three other women or two other women also that are also found. But that, I think that, I believe that was closer to where his residence was. Regardless, this is all during a short period of time. He was actually discovered very quickly in Nashville. Within a year of getting to Nashville, he's already been discovered. Within a few months, he's got an album, and they place him on what's called, it's like a fairgrounds tour. So in the United States, you have fairs. You have they're like circuses almost, right?
They're freaking massive. Okay.
Yes. Every county.
They're not like the fair in the UK. Okay. Like, these things are massive.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They're huge. They're these basically massive areas where you can, like a circus, where circuses kind of that travel can come there, and they'll stay there for like a month. But when they do come, so they'll say, let's say the Florida State Fairgrounds, or they'll have the Miami Fairgrounds, or they'll have they're all over the place. But one of the things that they do when they open up for a month here, and they open up multiple times throughout the year, they have things like farming, they have fairs, they have concerts. But typically when they have the fair in town, they have weeks worth of concerts. So what happens is that music in general, when a star is starting off, they put them on a fairgrounds tour. The reason they do is, one, they don't have a lot of, keep in mind, there's multiple artists coming. So if you're an artist and I've got 12 hits, well, I can go to a stadium and I can sell out a stadium.
Yeah.
But if I'm a new artist who's barely getting any record play, but the record label thinks, hey, this guy's got a shot, then they put me on a tour bus with five other guys that are in the same position I am, and they move them around the country for a year or two promoting the record. And that's what happened with Garth Brooks, is he ends up going on the fairground tour. But keep in mind, he's also in a couple of different buses with multiple other artists as well as the musicians. He does this for a while. There's not a lot that happens during that time for him. There's a few bodies. There's a few missing people. There's some unsolved homicides. Very few, though. So out of the 200, there's very few. Now, I kind of equate this, and so does the FBI agent and everybody else, is that he's being watched too much. There's too many people at the fairgrounds. It's just impossible to ever be alone in that situation. Nearly impossible. Here's what does happen. Within about a year or so, first of all, his first record does very well. He gets his first check after about a year. At that time, he gets a check for about $500,000. What he doesn't do is he doesn't go and buy a brand new European supercar. He doesn't buy an American muscle car. He doesn't go get a condo in Music City, Nashville, Music City, some kind of a high priced condo or a penthouse. He doesn't buy a $5 million, house or whatever. What he does is he goes and buys, I want to say it's, he spends $500,000? No, it's almost the entire check. It's like $425,000 on what I want to say is 40 acres of land.
Okay.
Is it 40 or is it more than that? I forget exactly. It's shit. I can't believe I forgot that too. I used to know that number.
That's right. I'll just take this opportunity to just remind everyone to like and share. And I hope you're all enjoying this. It's fascinating when you start hearing about the early year data points, Matt. I have to say it's it really sets the because it kind of gets your intrigue up. I mean, I'm doubly intrigued now that I've learned about the early years and these connections, and then of course him going on these tours, which would create a bit of an issue for him.
Yes. So all right, I'm gonna jump forward to another. I'll jump forward because I don't know exactly where it is, but it's not hard to find.
That's okay.
All right, so he ends up buying a bunch of land. I don't know if it's 40 acres or it's 100 acres, but
it's a big old chunk of land.
Right. And so what we had kind of tossed around was like, why? Why would you buy that much land? Why do you need that much? Why would you spend almost the entire amount of money that you received on a large piece of land? He does immediately go on another concert, though. He has another album, which blows up, which contains one of his biggest or two of his biggest hits, and one of which is I think it's called When the Thunder Rolls, and the other one is Friends in Low Places.
Okay.
Which is where I got the name of the book from. In Low Places.
Nice.
All right. Something's popped up. Okay, so here's what happens. People start going missing, obviously.
Where he bought the land.
I'm sorry?
In the place where he's bought this land. Or
No. People start going missing on his tour dates.
Okay, great.
So it very quickly jumps into, he goes here. Now, keep in mind, too, it's not all the tour dates. Like I said, there's over 1,000. And there's about 200 missing persons and unsolved homicides. But there's over 1,000 tour dates. We also included any time he had gone to be on the Howard Stern show. Mm. Or he had, because he might have been in, he was in New York for 3 days. Let's say he went to the Billboard Music Awards and he was there for 3 days or 2 days. Let's say he flew in and he went to the Country Music Awards show and he was there for 2 days. So that gives us a window of opportunity. Was he there? Did anything happen? How close? And it's remarkable how close these missing persons are or these unsolved homicides are within blocks or miles of the hotels or the concerts that he's in. And I'm going to give you a quick example of one of them. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'll be honest. Like, I feel like the tone's changed a little bit now for me. You know, it was kind of a funny meme to begin with, Matt. And now I'm like, these are some data points that, they're adding up here. They're adding up, Matt. They're adding up here.
Listen, I mean, we don't have that much. I've only got a few. Listen, I've got the whole books full of them.
Oh yeah,
half the book is just chronologically going through his life.
Okay.
Half the book is the actual cases. I have several paragraphs on every case. I have the the NMIS numbers, the case numbers. I have everything that you can look them up. And I'm not saying we're 100% 100% accurate on everything. Sometimes we would try and order the Freedom of Information Act or Freedom of Public Records Act. Not all states allow you to have that, but most of that data would have been was either on the websites or it was in some kind of a newspaper article, or it exists and we just don't have it at all. And since we wrote the book, there have been other things that have come that have come out. One of them dealing with his bar, which is actually a famous case that where the one that I can I'll get into that. But here, let me explain this. So, there's a girl, a petite 21-year-old named Tammy Zwicky. Okay. And this was in 1982. She lives in Evanston, Illinois. She's at her mother's house. She was going back to college. So let's say she'd gone home for the weekend. She's headed back to college. She goes to college, which is on Interstate 80. She stops at a rest stop, which is right next to mile marker 83. So in the United States, we have a lot of interstates because, you know, obviously the country's big. There's tons of interstates. You get on these interstates, you can be driving for hours and hours and hours and hours. Well, Tammy gets on the interstate, and so you have lots of rest stops. And the rest stops are honestly, you know, look, they're sketchy, right? But sometimes it's just a parking lot in the middle of nowhere, and they have bathrooms and showers. Sometimes they're massive and they have convenience stores and gas stations attached to them and everything. So she stops at this one and it's got a convenience store. There's a lot of traffic moving in and out. She stops there. She is seen by multiple people. She is seen by multiple people speaking with a guy who is, they said, connected to some 18-wheelers and trucks. Several trucks and 18-wheelers are parked in this parking lot. She pulls up. One of the guys associated with him gets out. He speaks with her for a while. She's never seen again. Now, here's the interesting thing about that, is that Garth Brooks, if you take where his last tour date is and the next tour date, he has to drive down Interstate 80. He has to drive down the interstate right at the same spot where she pulls over at mile marker, 83? Mile marker 83. Mile marker 83. So he has to go right down the same interstate. We don't know that he has to stop, but let me give you this example. Her car is found. Multiple people said she was speaking with some man that was associated with an 18-wheeler. So this is how these convoys move, right? When you have these tours and they move around, they pack them up on these 18-wheelers because they have to move everything, the stages, everything.
Yeah.
The description of the guy. I have the description. So anyway, the state police go, they interview everybody, they check it out. They look into the entire thing. The description of the guy that was given is that he's 6 foot tall, in his early 30s, with dark brown hair, Caucasian. I'm the spitting image of Garth Brooks at the time. And like I said, they have to cross paths.
It's just all adding up, Matt. It's starting to stack up, Jamie. It's starting to stack up.
You're killing me.
Dude, this was all fun and games at the start of this, and now it's getting really serious.
I can't even get into how many of these there are. Where I mean, literally, we have some of them where Garth Brooks's guys, they go to like a stadium, and they get there like if the concert's on Friday night, they get there on Wednesday or Thursday. It takes them at least a day to set up the stage, sometimes 2 days. So they're setting up those stages for a day or two. Same time, period of time to break them back down and put them on the truck. Yep. So they'll get there on a Wednesday or Thursday, and on a Friday, that maybe do a concert Friday and Saturday. They break it down on Sunday, Monday. They're back on the road.
Yeah.
Point is we have one guy that he literally his car is found across the street from the stadium. disappears. And this is back with Garth Brooks, by the way, was he was a jogger. He would go jogging in the morning because he was trying out because he wanted to be a baseball star. So he's going jogging in the mornings and it, you know, mornings, night, whenever. He's got a personal trainer. This guy next door gets found or disappears. Was he out jogging? Did he grab the guy? I don't know, but it's pretty odd. If you start adding them all up statistically, well, it's insane.
Do you know what's interesting? What's interesting, right, is let's say he got into the habit of every night on opening night unaliving someone, and we had this complete pattern where it was every night on the same evening. That super suspicious. But if you're driving through somewhere and you meet somebody at an intersection, that's plausible deniability right there.
Of course.
Like, that is next level evil genius madness right there.
And
I talk about that
with the FBI agent. We have multiple, right. I have multiple, the interviews are woven. All these interviews are woven throughout the book. The FBI agent specifically mentions that it's the perfect, well, so is one of the psychiatrists. She says it's the perfect cover. She said for most of these guys, they'll do something where they're not watched a lot, right? So let's say they, BTK, you know, he, which is a Dennis, whatever his name is. Anyway, yep. BTK, what he did was he was a code enforcement inspector. So he got to be in his car all day long driving around. All day long. So he was able to stalk his victims over the long period of time, attack them. And there's no connection to him. So what did the police do? The police find this body. They look through all the cell phone data. They talk to all of his friends. That's it. But Garth Brooks wouldn't be in his cell phone data. He wouldn't be in his phone. He wouldn't, there are no connections to these people. So of course it's very easy to get away with this type of thing. But that's assuming is involved. So let me give you another one. At some point, Garth is traveling so much, he actually goes out and he buys his own private plane.
At no point, he doesn't buy an island at any point, right?
No, that's fine.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just making sure.
So he buys a plane. Now, here's the great thing about traveling on a plane. And I got this from the FBI agent. Is that there's almost no security. You literally pull your car up.
Yep.
You unload your stuff into, nobody's looking through your stuff. You load it into the back cargo area of the plane. The plane gets clearance. They get moved out to the runway. Boom, they take off. Nobody's looking through your stuff. Almost never do they open a bag.
Is his property that you bought, was that big enough for a runway?
No.
No. Okay.
But it's not hard. I mean, if somebody's inside of a truck, nobody's questioning. Keep in mind, at the level this guy very quickly gets to, nobody questions him. And the roadie even said that. The roadie said, because I asked the roadie, and the roadie, of course, he laughed about it when I was like, what are the possibilities that maybe he would ask you to move like one of these trunks into the back of the van? Would you do that? And he said, of course. He said, nobody's going to question.
Oh, my God.
You don't ask what's in the trunk? He goes, why would I? We ask.
Why would he ask?
Right. And he said, no, he said, and I said, well, what do you think about the idea that he's potentially a serial killer? He said, come on, man. He said, what are you doing? Like, he's like, I don't fucking know if he's a serial killer. He said, what are you talking about? He did say, he goes, I can tell you this. He's an odd guy.
Once he reads your book and gets even just a quarter way through some of these stories, he's going to be being like, wait. He's going to be trying to remember every trunk he was ever. Like an oddly weighted trunk, you know what I'm saying? Like something that isn't an instrument that's packed tightly, that's a body rattling around in something. He's going to be thinking of every single trunk he ever moved. Because that's a really good point, Matt. Okay? It's a really good point.
I'll give you another one.
Okay.
Here's the other one. Do you know who Chris Gaines is?
Chris Gaines. 1 second.
Yeah, look up Chris Gaines.
Chris Gaines, a fictional rock persona? Oh, my God. Chris Gaines is a one-off fictional rock persona created as a movie character for Garth Brooks to explore musical styles far removed from his success in country as a country singer. Initially, Brooks planned to feature Gaines' persona in The Lamb. The Lamb, a motion picture that never materialized.
Listen, it goes on. Garth Brooks, at the top of his power, at the top of his celebrity, at the very top, he suddenly takes on the persona of Chris Gaines.
Whoa.
He decides that he is a kind of a punk rock rocker.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
He puts out an album.
No way.
He starts going around. He does multiple interviews as Chris Gaines. I mean, completely deadpan, in character, doesn't break character. There's a whole backstory he comes up with. Chris Gaines was raised by two Olympic athletes he's Australian. He has an Australian accent. He's raised by two athletes. His father ends up dying. He ends up, he's very successful. He's a sex addict. So he's got, and it was the other thing that happened. Oh, and then he's in a car crash, or is it an airplane crash? He's in some kind of a crash that disfigures his face.
And this is all just made up lore, or what?
It's insanity is what it is. It's straight insanity.
Listen,
I have so many quotes from other country music stars saying like, what are you doing? What is this guy doing? Like, he's insane. It's pure fucking insanity. He did the whole thing. He put out albums. He toured. He went on multiple different tours as Chris Gaines.
Bro, like, if this is your final form, right?
Yeah.
And at some point you turn yourself into Chris Angel, right? That's got to tell us something, because that is quite a contrast from where he was going and to where he ended up. What's people's take on this?
Do you see what this says? David Bowie, in reality, he became the biggest... You just moved it.
Oh, up here. Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah.
He became the biggest embarrassment of Brooks. It became the biggest embarrassment of Brooks's career. I mean, it was a humiliation. He pushed it for like a year or so. Nobody was interested. Nobody was having it. He became the butt of a bunch of jokes. Joe Rogan said it was... one of the most bizarre incidences in country music history.
Can I just say something really conspiratorial here?
Yeah.
Are we looking at ritual sacrifices and a humiliation ritual right here? Are we seeing if you want the superstardom, you need to publicly embarrass and shame yourself? Because I've had multiple discussions with some interesting people about theories about the elites and things like this. And when you start adding conspiracy to a madness like this, it starts making a little bit of sense, right? Because otherwise.
What I'm thinking of is dissociative disorder.
Could be.
Split personality disorder. That's very possible. And there's multiple people, there's multiple serial killers who have said, including Dennis Rader, who said that he said his other side or multiple personality was, he called it the Minotaur. Mm-hmm. And it was what he basically reverted into when he would commit these heinous crimes. Multiple serial killers have had these personas that they would then say made them do it, or that they would kind of revert into as they did these things, these horrible acts. A kind of a way to dissociate yourself or your personality from the act itself. So that's what I'm thinking.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
But well, I think a lot of the disassociation will come from past trauma in a lot of the serial killer cases, if you see what I mean. That's probably residual from something else. This seems to be a whole special slice of this is like a psychologist's wet dream is what this is right here.
Listen, he still talks about and when he talks about Chris Gaines, he talks about him in the third person.
I bet he does. Yeah. Yeah.
He goes, well, you know, he said Chris Gaines may come back because there may still be a chance that Chris may be making music again.
I really,
what are you talking about?
Bro, listen, all I'm saying is I'm so here for the Chris Gaines like second arc. Okay. Because if this guy here, okay, if this guy now at this age is going to revert back to this, that is the midlife crisis crash out of the millennium, bro. That of the millennium. But here's an interesting one. Is Garth the character or is Gaines the character?
Yeah, I've heard this. Have you heard that? Did somebody read that?
Someone in the side chat just said that, and I just thought,
yeah,
oh my
there's
God.
Multiple people have said that.
Oh my God!
That Chris Gaines is actually playing a country music star,
right?
In fact, yeah,
it's all an illusion. Yeah, I'm the third angel brother. Do you know what I'm saying? Madness.
Yeah, he's doing a Blue Steel right there in that picture.
Definitely doing the Blue Steel right there.
All right. Yeah, I have another one. Okay. I have another. This one's pretty bizarre.
Okay.
All right. So Garth Brooks, like most kids as a kid, like he wanted to be in sports. Wanted to play baseball. He's actually tried out for multiple baseball teams.
Okay.
Now they let him do the walk-on. He's not really technically able to do it, but they allow him to because he'll donate a ton of money to some charity, and then like they'll let him come and do tryouts.
Okay.
So, yeah. So he's done this multiple times. One of the times he did it, he was in Phoenix. He goes to Phoenix. Let me see. What was the name of the team?
So he's creating a reason to be somewhere under the guise of charitable work. That's what I'm hearing, right? That's the cover story.
Well, this is the Padres. No, he's genuinely trying out. He thinks he's going to be a baseball star. Like he wants to play. He wants to play in like the minor leagues.
Do you think it's convenient that he can lead into these delusions that we all go, he wants to be a baseball star, and then someone else goes missing?
What I agree, but it's not like he can't travel. He doesn't need to travel. He can easily travel. The point is that he goes and he does this. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, first of all, he's delusional. You're not going to be a baseball star. Everybody on the team says he's horrible.
Okay, brilliant.
And not just that, it's a very selfish thing to do because you're now taking the spot of somebody who maybe had a chance.
Yeah.
Okay, you have no chance. So I'm just giving you an example of one time. So he flies in.
Yeah.
He flies in. Now, this is back in, this is in 1999. He flies in to, what is the name of this international airport or this airport? So it's at the Sky Harbor Airport, long-term parking. I say. So there's a Sky Harbor Airport, which is where you keep your airplane. Mm-hmm. So he's got a private jet. He flies in. Now, this is interesting. There's a guy there named, a resident of Phoenix, the area, named Dang Tang. All right? I'm thinking he's Asian. So
okay, yeah.
Dang ends up, he's got in his Toyota Camry, he's going to visit a friend.
Okay.
Stops at a gas station and he disappears. Now, the gas station, by the way, is roughly half a mile. Is it half a mile away? I think it's about, I don't know how it exactly, but I want to say it's about half a mile away from the stadium where Garth is in the midst of tryouts.
jogging distance, you might say.
Yeah. And he's going in the morning that, you know, Garth isn't necessarily, this is roughly the time he's there, you know, or this is during the time that Garth is definitely there. Is he on the field? I don't know. This is early in the morning. Dang ends up missing. Now that's not a big deal. Okay. Cause this happens. We've got a lot of these that are just random, half a mile away, a mile away. Somebody goes missing. Garth was in the area. Okay. You know, here's the part that raises the hair on my arms.
Okay. Hang on. Let me prepare for this because my hair has been standing up for the last 20 minutes, Matt. I'm not going to lie.
Dang's Camry was found. We're talking about weeks later.
Okay.
His Camry was found in the Sky Harbor Airport's long-term parking garage. Oh, this is two months after he disappeared. Coincidentally, the vehicle was a stone's throw away from Garth's private jet. You've got the private jet, long-term parking in the building, a stone's throw away. It's been there for 2 months while Garth is trying out for this minor league team the whole time. That is, and the vehicle and Dang went missing half a mile away from the stadium where Garth also was. He's never been questioned. Never, you know, it's very, listen,
I'm not,
it's odd.
I'm not pausing because you've not given us enough information. I'm just, this is wild. I just want to say, if Garth Brooks doesn't plan a live performance within half a mile of your residency within the next 6 months as a marketing ploy, he's missing out on this completely. Okay.
Listen, this is insane.
This is insane.
People are country music fans.
Dude, this is insane. Okay. Like it's stacking and it's stacking and it's stacking. And it's not even, oh, they missed each other by a day or they were 5 miles apart. This is, you have to wonder if this was, I don't know, anything but a famous individual, but somehow we had all this information. If we wouldn't be laughing about it, you know, I'll be honest.
You know who we were unable to talk to, which I would have loved to talk to? Garth's first wife, mm-hmm. They got divorced.
Mm.
He gave her, listen to the payout, $125 million. Mm-hmm. 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 Like, what does she know about this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did she come home early from a shopping trip and he's wearing some victim's as a skin suit dancing in the mirror? I mean, I don't know. Does he have some of them locked up in cages in the basement? I don't know what's happening, but who knows what she knows?
Listen.
So about a year or two later, by the way, he ends up getting engaged to Trisha Yearwood and then they get married.
$125 million, right?
$125. The largest payout at the time for a divorce ever.
That's like a Jake Paul fight payday. Do you know what I'm saying? That's a once in a lifetime load of money. And I've said this on many shows. A lot of people would be like, oh no, well, you know, you couldn't pay me any sum of money to keep my mouth shut. $125 million.
Hell yeah. This is 25 years ago too, by the way. 25 years ago.
Yeah. So that's like 200 million. Let's just call it 200 million. Yeah. Everyone's being quiet. You're just taking the check, going to Barbados and just dealing with the horrors and the nightmares that you see every morning in the mirror. Mad, man. But it's adding up, man. And I'll be honest, I'm getting your book. And I never read books. But I need more. I need to know more, Matt. Because this is, I'm gripped. I honestly, I'm gripped.
Listen to this. This is the other thing I was going to say. I mean, I could go on and on. Like, there's no reason to go on and on. I can't read off all the dates and
of course.
It's too much. There's just too much. Those are just some of them.
Yeah, of course.
I wanted to mention that the FBI, so you were talking about long distance truck drivers.
Yeah.
So there's a real issue with long distance truck drivers in the United States being serial killers. And there was actually an entire FBI task force that was put together to investigate it. And one of the things that they came up with, and here's what they said, was that at any given time, there are between 25 and 50 serial killers, active serial killers, in the United States, murdering people.
Yep. Call it one a state. Just call it every state gets their own one, right? Here's a map of what is known as the hotspots for long-distance truck driver serial killers to do their bidding. I've actually spoken to a man called Delmas Colvin, who was a long-distance truck driver serial killer, and he spoke of times where he sold lot lizards, as he called them, the ladies of the evening that facilitate those truck stops.
Yes.
And, you know, he got a call in over the CB of a guy that was looking for a woman to unalive, and he sold her to him. And that was her. Gone. See you later. Mm. And he confirmed 100% that there's a network, because you'll have some guys that just like to torture someone, right? So then what do you do with a traumatized human? You can't just let them go, right? So then you hand them over to the truck driver that likes to R-word the women. But then what does he do with her? He's not going to kill her. So then he hands her over to the next guy. And it goes round like that until eventually they end up on a metaphorical chopping block. It's quite terrifying.
Yeah.
But yeah, continue with that point. I mean, what was the FBI's take on that with regard to the truck driving?
It's definitely an issue that these guys, you know, like I said, these guys tend to go into careers that allow them the ability to move freely and not really be monitored, right? Uh-huh. And in Garth's case, let's face it, he can go anywhere he wants, do whatever he wants. He has a private jet. He can move bodies. He can bury bodies. He can do whatever he wants. Nobody's questioning him. He has people to help him load up suitcases,
right?
Chest drawer, or what do you call them? I'm sorry.
Trunks, the big trunks.
Yeah, the trunks, the Roadcaster trunks, which are very common
when you're super traveling. Common. So, there's thousands of them.
He's able to do these things. You know, he could easily do something along these lines, and nobody would ever question it. So the other thing I was going to mention is one of the last things we had done was this was back there. There's two different cases. So Garth has a bar in downtown Nashville called Friends in Low Places. Right, that's his biggest song, Friends in Low Places, and so that's the bar. And a lot of these country music stars have bars down there. In Nashville.
That's a good place to have a bar.
Yeah, of course. So he has a bar. So what happens is, and we missed this one. This came to light later after I had written the book, that in March of 2024, there was a college student by the name of Riley Strain, 22 years old. He ends up going into Garth Brooks' bar.
Okay.
He orders a few drinks. He leaves Garth Brooks' bar. He goes to Luke Bryan's bar, has a few drinks, and he's asked to leave the bar. His mother spoke with Riley on the phone, and Riley said, this is while he's at Luke Bryan's bar. He had just gotten there, and he said, "I feel strange. I think somebody stuck something in one of my drinks." Now, we don't know if that was in Garth's bar or Luke Bryan's bar. He stays in Luke Bryan's bar for a little bit. Luke Bryan's another country music star, by the way. And he's asked to leave because he's stumbling, he's slurring his word. But the staff says he had two glasses of water and like one beer.
Right. Okay.
So it seems more likely somebody may have put something in his drink at Garth's bar.
And it's kicked in.
He goes into Luke's. He's tired. He's woozy. They ask him to leave. They think he's intoxicated. He leaves. He tells everybody he's going back to the hotel because he had gone to Nashville with a group not sorority. What do you call it? The men. You have a
fraternity.
Fraternity. Thank you. With fraternity buddies. So he's headed back to the hotel. And instead what happens is he disappears. His body's thrown off the Cumberland Bridge into the Cumberland River. And it washes up down the river a few days later. And now the police are saying he must have been intoxicated and he drowned. The bridge is nowhere near where he was. And it wasn't found for days. They don't know if he went over the bridge that night or if he went over the bridge a day or two later. Because the whole shore was searched. Nothing was found. Weird.
Yeah.
His body was later found a few days later. By some YouTubers who were looking into it.
Oh, damn.
They found, so the police had already scoured the shore. There was nothing. Then a couple days later, some YouTubers go out there looking for this guy. You know, the kind of the internet, you know, sleuths. They go out there, start walking. They find him right away.
So what you're literally saying is they would have got away with it if it wasn't for those pesky kids. That's literally what you're saying there, right?
So listen to this. In January of, this is 2000, this is 20, I'm sorry, this is 2025.
Damn!
This is this year.
This is this year!
In 2025, there's a guy, I'm sorry, in 2025, there is a homeless man who is found, who a homeless man known in the area. Now, it's very cold in January, by the way.
Yeah.
It's very cold. He's a homeless guy that stays in the area where all the bars are. He ends up being taken. He disappears near Garth's bar. And his body is found. He was near the bridge. Forget the name of the alleyway. I think it's called like Gay's Alley. Basically, there's a boardwalk, and he's found washed up near this intersection, up under the boardwalk, and his body was found. But once again, right next to Garth's bar, apparently there was a black truck that was noticed near him when he disappeared. His body was found a couple days later. They're saying he was drowned. His cart was found in the bar, or his push cart was found in the bar area. Who knows?
And you know what's
saying? There's a lot of people ended up missing near the river, near Garth's bar.
I think it'd be interesting to look at the level of fame and touring and opportunistic killings and the individuals that are killed in those periods. Regular folk, people in cars, people out jogging. And then when he's less on tour, it's the lesser dead, homeless people, prostitutes, things like this.
Yeah.
But the people in the bar, we have an urban legend, a conspiracy, a conspiracy fact in the UK about someone drowning gay men in canals, because a weird amount of like college age young men are turning up drowned in this canal, and the police have written it off as just people falling and drowning. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's like, what is it that happens in a police officer's mind? What do they think happens when you just fall in a body of water? Like, just if you fall maybe like 2 foot off of the edge of something, like, I'm assuming you just go, oh my God, I've fallen in the water, and grab the edge and pull yourself out. That's going to be 90% of the time, right? So I don't understand how so many people can be written off. And yeah, it was Manchester that happened. So I wonder how many tactics we're going to see in this case that are kind of the same MO, if you will, people turning up drowned, falling here, falling there, because this is... I'm going to go and get your book. I'll tell you that right now. I need to know more now. I need more now. Netflix, call Matt. Okay, we need this on a series now. Okay, we need it now.
Speaking of the book, the cover you have up,
yeah,
is not the cover that's on the book.
Oh, listen,
the reason why is that my lawyer wouldn't let me put those up. This is what we came up with.
Listen, that's okay. I'm going to be honest.
It's just a knife.
That is a sick graphic.
It is great, but my lawyer said, come on. He's like, you can't. He said, I could. It's satire. He said, Supreme Court says satire is absolutely fine. He said, you can do that. He said, but honestly, he said, why are you going to give this guy the opportunity to come at you?
You know what you should do? You should go and find some really limited edition guitar, right, where the edge looks like a knife, and then put that edge in. And if anyone ever asks, you can just be like, well, actually, it's a guitar and he's a musician. You're the one that assumed it was a knife. Do you know what I mean?
I'm perfectly fine. My lawyer was just like, no.
Well, listen, hit us with the book again, Matt. Let me see the cover again. Let's talk about where people can be buying this right now, because
it's the same thing. It's just a knife. His body's in low places. It's just a knife.
So good.
I think I'm in reverse.
You're good. You're good. But I'll tell you this, man. I need a call. I need to get this call. I need to be buying this book today. So I need to know more. I'm blown away. I thought this was just going to be a fun little meme that we were talking about, and you've hit us with I'm literally, when this podcast's over and I'm in a virtual gaming world, I'm going to be stopping people and ranting to them about this entire interview.
There's a ton of stuff in here with all the, and I go into the whole Segura thing. I do the
it's
whole
incredible.
Thing. Listen, it's super interesting. It's a lot of fun to read.
Yeah.
You know,
well, listen, we have to say it's a lot of fun because, you know, when we say something's fun, we're all having a laugh about it. But I tell you what, man, the laughs have gone from me now. And there's some serious data points here. And you have to do what else is really interesting. And people point this out a lot. When things like this pop up on the internet and nobody gets sued, right? I often wonder, like, what don't they want coming out in court? Do you know what I'm saying? They don't want somebody with research and data points in front of a judge going, so Garth, what where were you on this jog that happened around about this time? It must be for that reason, surely, because
In the US it opens you up to discovery,
right? That's what I'm saying, of course,
right. So you also have to think that Garth Brooks right now is being sued. He's been sued multiple times by people saying he ripped them off, that sort of thing. But he was being sued right now by a woman that was his longtime hairdresser that she says he assaulted her. You know, he multiple times while she was traveling with him
physically the other one, the sexual stuff. Okay.
No, like grape.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's
I wonder if the graping, and this is only if he is a lunatic psychopath murderer. I wonder if the graping was a coping mechanism for him not being able to do his thing. Maybe I wonder. Oh man, if this all was to come out and be real, and it turns out that it's all about control and captivity and dominance and the I don't know. I'm just speculating, but that's very telling that we've got at least an accusation. I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, it's an accusation.
It's an accusation. Okay. Okay.
They're going back and forth. Who knows? He's saying it's a money grab.
Let's just throw up. This is all allegedly, just for double legal safety. Okay. But what you're saying, the victims aren't allegedly, the data points aren't allegedly. You know what I'm saying? It's just the conclusion we're drawing is allegedly. Right?
Yes. Oh, listen to this. You want to hear something funny? So I was actually going to go on Segura's show.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
Segura's so freaked out by the book, he doesn't even want to have me on.
Oh, do you know what?
The whole thing started with Segura.
Uh-huh. But listen, if you're too famous people, maybe the two of you do illegal activities, and then one of you annoys the other one, and you say some stuff on a podcast, and then all of a sudden it starts snowballing, and now you're scared because people have also done research into Matt and the Segura, and started lining some dates up. So are we looking at the first time the cracks have been being shown in the network of the cabal and the bloodlines and the evilness of Hollywood? I don't know. But I tell you what, I'm going to read this goddamn book, right? I'm going to read this goddamn book. And if Matt Cox turns up unalived of food poisoning in a few weeks, nothing suspicious there whatsoever. And we definitely won't be looking at you, Garth. All right? I'm just saying. Okay, crazy, bro. Crazy. What an incredible work you've done, Matt, on this.
I have other guys I know that got out of prison. Yeah. One of them started a center that tests does like a biometric test and a DNA test to determine if you potentially are at risk of having cancer. I know another guy that started like a clinic. I know guys that have started sober living houses. This is what I'm doing with my time. I've fallen short.
No, you've not fallen short.
Other guys that got out and said, I'm going to do something good for society. Yeah. This is what I came up with. It's not great.
Listen, I'm not being funny. I can definitely smell a part two coming of the bodies in low places, because I imagine this is only going to just snowball. And once people read this and then they put in their 40 hours a month of free research and the data points add up more and more and more and more, I feel like we might be back here holding our heads going, oh no, oh no, Matt's back with more freaking receipts, yo, because it's, I honestly did not know how this was going to go. And I genuinely thought that the whole Garth Brooks conspiracy was based off very loose threads, and nothing you presented could be seen as a loose thread. I mean, it is solid data. It's solid data, bro.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm just saving lives. That's what I'm doing. What would Jesus
do? One at a time, brother. Just got to do it one at a time. Ladies, if you're watching, make sure you're watching the most aggressive, you know, true crime. Protect yourselves. And make sure you get Matt's book, because, yeah. Why hasn't Garth Brooks sued? You know the answer to that, okay? You know the answer, all right? God.
Damn. Oh, my God. All right, are we good?
Yeah, listen, man, I'm telling you now, there's so many people that are getting this as a late Christmas present as well. It's too good. But look, Matt, thank you for being here. Thank you for giving up your time. Thank you for going through that in a way that has, I think, got a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of internet sleuthing going on tonight. I can hear the rapid typing fingers of Reddit posts happening as we speak.
Listen, it's on Audible, and I have there's an e-version, Audible, hard copy, soft copy. You can get it all on Amazon.
Oh, well, listen, I'm going to go and get myself a hard copy, and thank you so much, Matt. Till next time. To everyone at home, thank you for watching, like, subscribe. Thank you to the mods. Thank you to the Sean Atwood channel. Have a great Christmas, and I'll see you guys tomorrow. Oh, listen, I'll see you guys tomorrow. I'm putting together a show on all the new Epstein files. It was meant to be today, but it didn't happen. So tomorrow. Thank you again, Matt. We'll see you on the next one. Peace.
All right.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here,
right now. It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.